Give it a second.
I will.
Check the bottom.
Tonti, you and Daisy B.
Speak so she can check the volume.
Hello? Testing, testing, what do you do? Testing, testing.
You want that light on?
Nah, I don't think I need it.
There's enough light
here.
What's that? There's enough light in here.
Yeah.
It's just hard sometimes to read your notes.
No, no, I was making a double joke. The light is in here. Anyway.
What does that mean?
Are you?
Oh, good. Wait for a sec. This was a hard teaching for me to put together, and I realized I had y'all would have been freaked out. There was 11 pages of stuff. And as I just kept throwing pages out, I realized that I was putting a lot of me in there. And so sometimes I have to be careful. So this is going to be a lot of scripture. So I hope your fingers are ready to do some spinning. But I got it down to just a short amount, about half of what it was.
Hallelujah.
Yeah.
I was going to say, 11 pages is not bad, but usually my 11 pages are still at 25 or 30.
Oh, yeah. No. I think everybody, sometimes whatever you're going through or whatever's on your heart, sometimes it can cloud what the Lord is trying to show you. So I feel like I've got a purer stream now in what he was trying to show me through this message.
Yeah, it can definitely leak its way into your sermon.
Right. So today is Sunday, June 30th of 2021.
May
30th. May
30th. You jumped them.
I sure did. I need to fix that. Wouldn't it be nice if it was June 30th? I feel like I'm crawling towards the finish line of school. I know you are. So tonight, I want to focus on two pretty familiar stories out of the scriptures. So I'd like for you to start by turning to Matthew chapter 2. I saw something when I was reading in the Old Testament that I'd never seen before. And what I thought the Lord was showing me ended up being something totally different. And so I just want to share with you what he's shown me. So, Matthew chapter 2, we're going to start at verse 2. Now, when Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea in the days of Herod the king, behold, there came wise men from the east to Jerusalem. So, from the east to Jerusalem. Okay, if you picture a map, for me, I have to visualize where they're coming from. I need to see a map. So they're going from the east to Jerusalem. In verse 2, saying, where is he that was born what?
King.
King. Where is he that was born king of the Jews? For we have seen what?
His star.
His star. Possessive. Where is he that was born, is born, king of the Jews? For we have seen his star in the east, and we are come to worship him. What a declaration. They knew who, they knew what they came for. They came from the east to Jerusalem for a king that they knew was there because his star led them there. These wise men were magi. They were astrologers. They observed stars. They noticed patterns. They made predictions. In this account in Matthew, these men had watched the stars and sought answers to a promise based on something. What was that something that caused them to look for answers? Just ask yourself that. Keep that question in the back of your mind. I have a few more questions for you.
Yeah.
During that time, there was widespread expectation of the coming of a great king, a great deliverer. However, When these magi or wise men arrived in Jerusalem from the east and began asking where this king was that they knew was there because of his star, they were met with blank stares. The wording in verse 2 suggests that they went around the city asking anybody who would listen to them, "Where's the king? Where's the king? Where's the king?" And nobody knew what they were talking about. It says they were saying, "Where is he that is born king of the Jews?" Seems that they felt that if they knew of this Messiah or king's birth, then surely anybody would have been able to know how to point them in the right direction. They must have been a little more than shocked to discover that no one knew what they were talking about. The contrast is striking between these Gentile wise men who follow a star to Jesus and the Jewish chief priests and scribes, educated people who had all the appearances of being God's holy ones, God's favorites, his star pupils here on earth. These people that knew the scriptures, they knew the prophecies of old, they knew everything about the prophecies that had come down from the time of Moses. And yet, they totally missed that Messiah had been born a mere, 5 miles away in the city of Bethlehem. God's people either totally ignored or completely missed. They were blind to the signs of this Messiah, while these wise men were eagerly seeking him out. So, next question. What gave these wise men an edge in seeking out Jesus? Let's keep going. Verse 7. Then Herod, when he had privately called the wise men, inquired of them diligently what time the star had appeared. And in verse 8, and he sent them to Bethlehem, and he said, "Go, search diligently for the young child. When you have found them, bring me word that I may come and worship him too." Yeah, right. Verse 9, when they had heard the king, they departed, and lo, the star, which they saw in the east, went before them till it came and stood over where the young child was. And when they saw the star, they rejoiced with exceeding great joy. And in verse 11, and when they were come into the house, they saw the young child with Mary, his mother. They fell down and worshipped him. And when they had opened their treasures, they presented unto him gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. It's interesting. Aunt Jane did a message maybe a year ago, I don't even know, but on how to give gifts, meaningful gifts. These wise men gave meaningful gifts. Gold, we know, speaks of what? Kingship. Gifts fit for a king. We know that frankincense speaks of the incense that was burnt in temple prayer, right, and tending to the temple. So his priestship. And we know that myrrh was used in burial. And so it speaks of him, Jesus, as the perfect sacrifice. These kings, these wise men, knew what gifts to give. They immediately recognized Jesus. They understood his purpose. And you can see that because of the gifts they brought. There was no question. Again, the stark contrast between the Jews of the day, whose own royal ancestry, their lineage, coming from King David, had given all these prophecies of old, and these wise men who were so sure of the king that they had found based on the exact same prophecies. How were they so sure? Let's keep going. Verse 12, and being warned of God in a dream that they should not return to Herod, they departed into their own country another way. Okay, so where was their own country? That's what I asked. Where was the east? We know that east literally refers to the rising of the sun. So where did these men come from? What was it that led them to Jesus? The answer to this lays in the book of Daniel. So we are going to flip to Daniel. Go to Daniel chapter 1. Remember, as I've talked to you in other teachings, just historically speaking, when the Jews fell in Jerusalem, when Judah fell to Babylon, okay, there was a remnant of the king's seed and other nobles that were marched from Jerusalem into Babylon. Okay, this remnant. These were not dummies or peasants, Jewish peasants. These were select men. They were educated men. They were prestigious. They were wealthy. They were part of the ruling class of Judah that were literally captured when Judah fell and marched. They came from the king's lineage or the king's household. Okay, so in chapter 1 of Daniel, verse 3, it says, "And the king spake unto Ashpenaz, the master of the eunuchs, that he should bring," what? "Certain of the children of Israel and of the king's seed and of the princes." He wanted these people. He wanted these men of the king's seed. And in verse 4, it says, "Children in whom was no blemish, but well favored." These are Jews. "Skillful in all wisdom, cunning in knowledge, and understanding science, and such as had," and you can underline this, "the ability in them to stand in the king's palace." Why did they have this ability in them? Because they had stood in the king's palace in Judah. Now they're in Babylon. And they still have all of the skills that were established in them in Judah. "And whom they might teach the learning and the tongue of the Chaldeans," or the Babylonians. Okay, so these are select men who had the ability in them, who were specifically targeted to be trained in the ways of Babylon. The purpose was, number one, as far as I can see, is to bring out assimilation to the ways and customs of Babylon, and number two, loyalty and patriotism to this new world. Because if these men of Judah's royal house, were of the king's seed and princes were to buy into the Babylonian regime, then it would bring legitimacy to everyone else that Babylon had conquered and would conquer. Okay, it was a brilliant strategy. And even today, when we have citizens that are naturalized, what do we want them to learn the language, right? I mean, you want to bring about some assimilation because it gives a sense of loyalty. Okay, verse 5. "And the king appointed unto them a daily provision of the king's meat and of the wine which he drank, and nourish them for 3 years." That's important. 3 years, that at the end they might stand before the king. They weren't brought into the king yet. Nebuchadnezzar, the chief eunuch, remember, wanted to find men who were capable of being brought into the king. He would give them 3 years to be trained up, and then at the end of 3 years, then they would be able to stand before the king, knowing all the customs of Babylon. Okay, so King Nebuchadnezzar, he was doing everything he could to woo and swoo these men. He provided for them. He provided for them not just adequately, but he provided for them lavishly. He wanted them, these exiles, to experience his goodness in stark contrast to what the Lord had just allowed them to go through in Judah. Okay? And so, Jerusalem had been under siege at the end of its time, and people were literally starving in the streets. And so now they're in Babylon, and they are being wined and dined. Or the king is wanting to wine and dine them. Okay? We know that, there's none good but God. But that's a hard sell to people who have just been literally ripped from their homeland. You know, it's easy to be the new God if you can provide for them in a way that you thought your God should be providing for them. or should be providing for you. They felt that God, in a lot of ways, some of them felt that God had abandoned them. This was a time when, justified or not, the people were hard-pressed to feel sometimes a connection to God, let alone look to the greater good and the suffering that they were having to endure. And of course, we know that the prince of the eunuchs, his name was Melzar. We're going to talk a little bit more about him, but he gave them all new names, Babylonian names. And we know that Daniel became Belshazzar, and then we have Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Okay. So let's look at verse 8, and we're still in Daniel chapter 1. But Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with the portion of the king's meat, nor with the wine which the king drank. Therefore he requested of the prince of the eunuchs, his name is Melzar, that he might not defile himself. Okay, in verse 9. Now, who? God had brought David into favor and tender love with who? The king? No. The prince of the eunuchs, Melzar. God brought Daniel into favor with the prince of the eunuchs. This is important. In verse 10, and the prince of the eunuchs said to Daniel, I fear my lord the king, he's talking about Nebuchadnezzar, I fear my lord Nebuchadnezzar, who has appointed your meat and your drink that you're supposed to eat and drink, for why should Nebuchadnezzar see your faces worse liking than the children which are of your sort? Then shall ye, he's saying, then shall you, Daniel, make me endanger my head to the king, King Nebuchadnezzar. Okay? Notice in verse 9 that it was God who, in the midst of these circumstances, brought favor and tender love from this prince of the eunuchs. Okay? Have you ever been in a position, I'm not even going to ask this, Michelle, you have been in this position all year, where you were hired as a nurse to work in a clinic at a school, and you have found favor with everybody in that school, and your position has changed, and you have been put over so many different things. You know that that was God. Okay? That is exactly the position that Daniel was in. The other side to that coin is we also know that Daniel was a man of prayer. And this is a warning to you. Your strength, just like Daniel's strength, is going to come from you really, really pressing into God in prayer and being in fellowship. Because Daniel also had his Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego's. So he has absolutely called you to be where you are, but you need to remember where your strength comes from in being there. So, anyway.
I'll take that message too.
Yeah.
Can I have it?
That's for all of us. That's for all of us. That's for me at home when I'm outnumbered. You're outnumbered too. And so, in order to convince this prince of the eunuchs, the man who loved Daniel and his fellow interns, Daniel proposes an experiment. He says, listen, prince of the eunuchs, Melzar, give me 10 days. Just give me 10 days. He said, and then what? You look on me. You look on the countenance of me and my buddies, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and then you be the judge. He wasn't asking him to do anything
extraordinary.
He was saying, listen, you can rely on your own senses based on where you're at right now. He wasn't asking for him to have faith. He wasn't asking for him to step out. He was saying, look, give us 10 days. You're not going to lose that much time in, 3 years. Give us 10 days. And then you decide if you think we can pull this off. The insinuation in my head is that if Melzar would have looked at them and said, I don't think so. You're looking a little hollow in the cheeks. that perhaps they would have renegotiated what Daniel and his and you know the three others were willing to eat or drink. That's but God was giving him a nugget to pull him in, Melzar. Okay? So he says, you be the judge of whether or not we can pull this off. And this showed the eunuch, Melzar, that Daniel had genuine respect and concern for him and his life, which garnered, obviously, even more admiration from the man that God had caused to give him favor. This is an example of how God is working so many different facets of a situation to benefit those he loves. Okay? And so we know that the experiment worked. So in verse 15, it says, at the end of 10 days, their countenance appeared, what? Fairer and fatter in flesh than all the children which did eat the portion of the king's meat. Okay? And this was according to whose judgment?
The eunuch.
The eunuch's judgment. Not Nebuchadnezzar, not anybody else. The eunuch made this call. And he said, hey, it really did work. Okay? So in verse 16, it says, Melzar took away the portion of their meat and the wine that they were supposed to drink, and he gave them pulse. Okay? And so, you know, we know that this experiment or test was not for the king. This test or experiment was for Melzar, the king's prince of the eunuchs, and God's love for him, Melzar, and the purpose he wanted to accomplish through him, Melzar, not the king. Okay, go down to verse 18. It says, now at the end of the days, now we're talking at the end of the days, what are we talking about? The end of the 3 years that the king had said he should bring them in, then the prince of the eunuchs did what? He brought them before Nebuchadnezzar. And in verse 19, the king communed with them, and among them all was found none like Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, Belshazzar, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Therefore stood they before the king. And in all matters of wisdom and understanding that the king inquired of them, he found them what?
Ten times better
than all the magicians and astrologers that were in his realm. Of course, we know that this 10 days wasn't just a fluke. It was based on that 10-day experiment. I believe that based on the 10 days that Melzar gave them in the beginning, they were found 10 times better. And this was not for 1 minute lost on the prince of the eunuchs. He saw exactly what had happened. And his faith in these foreigners was not only justified, it was rewarded extraordinarily. Because he got the accolades for being able to develop them. So what does this have to do with Matthew? Okay, well, we got to go to chapter 2. King Nebuchadnezzar has a dream. Okay, King Nebuchadnezzar has a dream, and he calls on Daniel and the wise men to do what? Tell him about it. Okay, so in verse 3, it says, the king says unto them, chapter 2, verse 3, I have dreamed a dream, and my spirit was troubled to know the dream. Then spake the Chaldeans, or the Babylonians, to the king in Syriac, O king, live forever, tell thy servants the dream, and we will show you the interpretation. This is pretty bold, okay? The wise men were relying on natural wisdom to advise the king about his dream. They had no reason to doubt that the king would tell them what the dream was, and that they could use their wisdom and their training to give him the interpretation. Verse 5. And the king answered and said, the thing is gone from me. If you will not make known unto me the dream with the interpretation thereof, then you'll be cut in pieces, and your houses shall be made a dunghill. These wise men were being called out. Mm-hmm. They either had the supernatural ability to tell the king, King Nebuchadnezzar, the dream and the interpretation, or they didn't. Okay, they weren't going to be able to fudge. They weren't going to be able to give a sales pitch and tell them what the dream meant unless they knew what the dream was.
Right.
And Nebuchadnezzar didn't even know what the dream was, as far as I can tell. In verse 6, it says, "But if you show the dream and the interpretation thereof, you will receive of me gifts and rewards and great honor. Therefore, show me the dream and the interpretation thereof." Okay, so what's happening? King has a dream. He knows it's an incredibly significant dream. He can't remember it. He tasks these wise men to tell him not only the dream, but tell him the meaning. And, you know, but the king is requesting a skill that no amount of guessing or theorizing would be able to help. The king needed a sure word. He needed an answer, and nothing else was going to suffice. In verse 9, "But if you will not make known unto me the dream, then there is one decree for you. You have prepared lying and corrupt words to speak before me till the time be changed. Therefore, tell me the dream, and I shall know that you can show me the interpretation of thereof." So the wise men reply in verse 11. "It's a rare thing that the king requireth. There is none other that can show it before the king except the gods, whose dwelling is not with flesh." This was literally an admission that they didn't have these prophetic or mystical powers. And in verse 12 it says, "For this cause was the king angry and furious, and he commanded to destroy all the wise men of Babylon." The curtain had been pulled back. The king saw the ordinariness of his own magi or wise men, and when it counted, they were not qualified in the supernatural. In verse 13, "And the decree," whose decree? "The king's decree went forth that the wise men should be slain, and they sought Daniel and his fellows to be slain." Daniel and the wise men. Daniel and company were lumped in with these wise men after they had accomplished this 3-year internship. They had learned the Babylonian language and customs and culture, and they were found 10 times greater. Okay? But now God's ready to set Daniel apart. So Daniel speaks to the king, to the king's guard, who's in charge of this execution order. In verse 15, he said to Arioch, the king's captain, "Why is this decree so hasty from the king?" And Arioch made known the thing to Daniel. Then Daniel went in and desired of the king that he would give him time and that he would be able to show the king the dream and the interpretation. Think about it. This was an act of faith, but this wasn't an act of blind faith. Okay, Daniel had grown and matured in his walk with God to know that God was going to give him the dream. Okay, when, you know, I was little, I used to think that I could, you know, I just pray real hard. "Look, let me walk on water." And I would go and try and walk on our swimming pool, and I would drown every time, you know. And so this was not an act of, I wouldn't drown, but I would sink. I would actually float across the water. Okay. Daniel was not asking God to do something that he hadn't already been brought into a position of being able to trust God to ask for. Okay. This was not anything for him. And I'll show you in just a minute why. God has allowed my family in particular, and your family for sure too, to go through certain circumstances in our life where we know that God is going to provide for all of our needs. Where it doesn't make sense, it doesn't look like it should happen, but there's certain things that I just don't stress about. I mean, I know it can get hard and, you know, you don't know where the next penny is going to come from, but I know this. God is going to meet all of my needs and all of my family's needs, because he always has, and that's just, that's not my struggle. That's, you know, I have other struggles, but that in particular is not really my struggle because of what we've already walked through. You know, is that right? So, you know, Daniel had already been through an exile from his homeland. He had been through this 3-year internship. He had found favor with the king. He knew that there was no reason why this prince of the eunuchs should have love for him and trust him with what he wanted to. Like, he had just walked through so many things that this was not an act of blind faith where he tells Nebuchadnezzar, you know, listen, I'll get this for you. Just give me a minute, and I'll get back to you with the dream and the interpretation. So go to verse 19. It says, then was a secret revealed unto Daniel in a night vision, and Daniel blessed the God of heaven. In verse 23, it says, I thank thee and praise thee, O God of my fathers, who has given me wisdom and might, and hast made it known unto me what we desired of thee. For you have now made known unto us the king's matter. Then look what happens. 24. Pay close attention here. Therefore, Daniel went into Arioch, the captain of the king's guard, whom the king had ordained to destroy the wise men of Babylon. He went in and said thus unto them, destroy not the wise men of Babylon. Bring me in before the king, and I will show the king the interpretation. Stop the execution order. The only thing that could have stopped the execution order was the dream and the interpretation. Then the most significant part of this account. Are you listening? Daniel tells the king the why of God giving him both the dream and the interpretation. In verse 30, but as for me, this secret is not revealed to me for any wisdom that I have more than any living, but for their sakes, that they shall make known the interpretation to the king, that thou mightest know the thoughts of thy heart. For their sakes, who is there? The wise men. Then was Daniel made the chief ruler of the wise men. In verse 48, says, the king made Daniel a great man, gave him many great gifts, and made him ruler of the whole province of Babylon and the chief of the governors over all the wise men of Babylon. Think about it. God used Daniel to bring deliverance for the wise men for the purpose of Daniel, who had already been put in charge, discipling them to know how to usher in and welcome Messiah.
Very good. Good, good, good.
Later on, in Bethlehem. Not because of anything they did, but because of the plan that God had for these wise men to accomplish in recognizing redemption, not just for the Jew, but also for the Gentile. Daniel the deliverer stood in the gap for these men. He literally and figuratively pointed these men to life, truth, redemption, Jesus. Jesus stands in the gap for us. Until we mature, like these wise men, into everything that he's called us to be. 100-fold, perfected, sons and daughters. We too were destined for death, just like these wise men. Then Jesus came, and he lived a perfect life, died a perfect sacrifice, and defeated death, so that we can be raised up into the men and women God intended for us to be before the fall in the garden. Daniel's relationship with God and his walk of faith and obedience brought deliverance to the wise men and put them in a position to be among the first to recognize our Savior.
Amen.
And deliver Jesus and his family also from Herod's rampage. Why? Because they were the only ones looking for him. They knew what they were looking for. As lovers of Jesus, we have to get our eyes focused on the fact that Jesus is coming again. And if we aren't keeping our eyes focused on the fact that he's coming again in everything that we do, then we will not be the wise men of this generation. We need to come under the authority of Daniel's, be discipled and taught to prepare the way for Jesus' return. The welcoming committee is not going to be the church. It's not going to be the religious institutions and the hoity-toity scholars and office holders. They're going to miss it, just like the Jewish scholars of Jesus' day. It's going to be the wise men who submit and learn and then usher in the church. It's going to be the remnant. As a side note, that's pretty much all I have, but one of the things that I thought was really cool, okay, if you read in Daniel, God uses the angel Gabriel to minister to Daniel in the book, and in the book of Daniel. This is the same angel Gabriel who what? Talked to Mary and Elizabeth and Zacharias, and also told Joseph to flee Egypt. I believe, and this is conjecture, that when God warned the Magi not to return to Herod, that this was actually Gabriel too. This was a full circle event for Angel Gabriel, starting in Daniel, bringing him up to Messiah, and I don't believe that Gabriel's done. I think Gabe's role is also going to be there with the second coming. I think he's going to play a role and be involved in how the wise men of the second coming are going to be able to prepare the church for Jesus' return. So.
Amen.
Questions, thoughts, comments?